Being a chef means keeping your cool in the kitchen. It's up, it's up. And with Resi Priority Notify and Global Dining Access through my Amex Platinum card,
right this way,
it's nice to try someone else's food for a change. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
Carol G.
Juan Gabriel.
Christina Aguilera.
What do these three have in common?
You mean apart from impeccable style, chart-topping canciones, and drama?
Facts, yes, all of the above are correct, but most importantly, they're some of the biggest Latin icons in the world. And they're just a few of the game-changing Latin stars we're covering in Becoming an Icon Season 2. Listen to Becoming an Icon on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey there, everyone. Welcome back to another Sunday night edition of the Fantasy Pros Football Podcast. I'm your host, Dan Harris. With me, as always, is Mike Tagliere. You can find us on Twitter at DanHarris80 and at MikeTagliereNFL. Tags, I can only imagine what it's like at your house right now after the Bears' utter dismantling of the Bucks. So, my only question is, have you actually filed the paperwork yet to legally change your son's name to Trubisky, or are you waiting for a couple of days or what?
I'm definitely waiting. I mean, it's funny because my friends, they go back and forth in this chat and talk about, you know, there's guys that aren't Bears fans, there's guys that are, and like, you know, to see the ups and downs. And I'm like, guys, just as much as I wasn't going to take away so much from the negative game, I wasn't going to take so much away from the positive game. He looked good, but I think the game plan was phenomenal. The Bucks just, they didn't show up as a team, man. So, I mean, there's definitely some positive takeaways from that. There's also some reasons to just say, come back down to earth. It was a step in the right direction. I'm just not willing to sell my soul to acquire Mitch Trubisky right now.
Yeah, well, it's hard not to be walking on cloud nine, frankly. As a Bears fan, it was really a remarkable performance. And, you know, all the creative offense that we've kind of been waiting to see was out in full force definitely today. And I have a close friend who's a Bucks fan who was just pulling his hair out. I mean, and we'll get to that game. And I'm glad you're not going to get quite too high off it just yet. But before we get there, why don't you give me your biggest takeaway from the day?
That Sony Michel is a legitimate borderline RB1 for the remainder of the season.
He looked great. He looked great. Absolutely. I mean, with Rex Burkhead out, and obviously James White got a lot of play too, but I mean, Michel is somebody who you're going to be starting without question going forward with zero concerns, right?
Yeah, absolutely. The thing is seeing the 25 carries, it's not even necessarily the results that he had. The Dolphins had been a team that I felt like he should be able to run against, but I just wanted to see the timeshare because I wanted to see if James White was going to get, you know, a much bigger workload. And they kept him kind of in the similar workload. They gave him a few extra carries, and that's fine for his fantasy value. But Sony Michel, I mean, that's a massive workload. And the fact that he put up the points that he did today without catching a single pass, it just shows that his ceiling is there for more because Sony Michel is a fantastic pass catcher.
No, he definitely is, and that's actually funny that he was able to kind of have such an impact despite the fact that he caught zero passes today, right? I mean, it was all White in the passing game. I mean, the Patriots as a whole, I think, frankly, today, if you were not expecting this outcome, then you probably haven't been paying attention to the Patriots for the last decade or so. You know, you knew that they were going to come in. Now, I don't think they look 100%, and we'll get to that game, but they certainly looked like they were going to have a bounce-back performance, and Michel was a huge part of it. For me, Andrew Luck, man. I mean, I've kind of been doubting Luck. Obviously, we talked at last show, you know, we didn't want to make too much of it, but it was certainly the Jacoby Brissett being brought in to throw the Hail Mary at the end of the game. Even they were concerned about his arm. But 40 completions of 62 pass attempts, 464 yards with four touchdowns. A lot of that, by the way, without T.Y. Hilton. I mean, he is throwing to backups for most of the game. Not most of the game. Hilton was in and out a little bit. And we'll talk a little bit more about that because it does sound like he's going to miss the Thursday night game coming up from early reports. But I thought he looked great. And again, quarterback, if this week sort of is something that exemplifies how deep quarterback is. You know, when you're, I'm trying to draw the line between who is a must start quarterback, it's really difficult to draw that line because there's like 17 guys that you can feel pretty comfortable starting each week. But for me, it was just great to see Andrew Luck look at least closer to the old version of himself than the new version. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, definitely I do. And I should let everybody know, like, there's a lot of people that have asked me about, talk about on the podcast because they heard that I was out for the DFS episode this past week. And I'm sorry for that. Obviously, my dog, I was dealing with some things. He's back home. The doctor called it a miracle. He is back home with us and doing well. So thank you guys for reaching out, asking me to update on the podcast. I really do appreciate it. And hopefully I sound like I'm in better spirits now that he's home and everything is good. But yeah, no, Andrew Luck is someone that, you know, I did some DFS research on Saturday because I was kind of behind with dealing with everything with the dog. But I did some DFS research on Saturday and I chose to use Andrew Luck in my cash games this week because I felt like without a run game, they needed to get the ball out quick. We saw Eli Manning and the Giants execute that plan last week against them. So it was kind of like a week where I felt like they had the blueprint for success and Andrew Luck's skill set right now, it kind of fit that what they should have been able to do. And they kind of did. They started out somewhat slow and then there was some garbage time that Andrew Luck got. But knowing he's going to be without T.Y. Hilton and that they're playing on Thursday Night Football against the Patriots this week, it's a little scary for sure. You know, him missing both starting left tackle and right tackle, this is all cause for concern. And now knowing that T.Y. Hilton's gone, that Ryan Grant has to be the number one option, that Jack Doyle's dinged up, I still think Andrew Luck is going to be a streamer going forward rather than an every week starter. But it's good to see him come through in this, you know, with a performance like he did in today's game.
Yeah, absolutely. In light of the injuries, his immediate outlook is certainly a little bit cloudy, but especially with this game because the Texans blitz so much and Luck had really struggled against the blitz earlier this year. He had about a 72 quarterback rating against the blitz, one of the worst in the league. So it was really good to see him succeed in this matchup. And yes, the injuries, especially for Thursday night, the outlook probably isn't great, but in the end, I do feel more comfortable with the long-term view. So before we get into the next segment, which I know is your favorite, I do want to mention one of our sponsors, Pristine Auction. Now, if you haven't yet checked out Pristine Auction, you are seriously doing something wrong. Here's the deal. Pristine Auction has hundreds of auctions that end every day. If it's being auctioned off on the site, it is guaranteed authentic from only the most trusted sources. Now, maybe you're sitting there thinking, I don't know, I've never really bid on sports memorabilia or something like that. But there is zero downside to checking out the site. It's free to register, and it's free to bid. You only pay something if you actually walk away with the merchandise. And trust me, if you do decide to start bidding, there's a pretty good chance you're going to grab something at an amazing price. Just yesterday, I saw a signed Michael Thomas Saints jersey for $79.85, a Tyreek Hill signed Chiefs jersey for $60.84, and a Todd Gurley signed football for $92.14. And just to be clear, you're not limited to football memorabilia. Pristine Auction has a ton of items from every sport, plus awesome things like comics and movie and music memorabilia. So don't waste any time. Go to pristineauction.com now. That's PRISTINE.com. And when you're there, there's a How Did You Hear About Us section, so make sure you mention that you heard about them from Fantasy Pros so we can keep having signed giveaways like we've been doing for the last couple of seasons. All right, Tags, it's time for your favorite, the Arnold Schwarzenegger segment, and I'm calling this one, I Need Your Clothes, Your Boots, and Your Motorcycle. Now look, that has absolutely nothing to do with what I'm going to ask you about, but I'm kind of running out of Arnold Schwarzenegger lines. So basically, that's what I'm calling this one. And instead, what this segment is going to be, and by the way, it's from Terminator 2, of course, this one's going to be, I'm going to ask you, frankly, give me a winner and give me a loser from the day.
A winner from the day, I will say the New England Patriots. I mean, I don't want to say a single player from their team because I think their entire team got better. To see them with a big, big win, that's obviously massive for them. Everybody took a step forward there, I think, except for Chris Hogan. But by the way, Chris Hogan, I do believe he's going to get better, if that makes sense, when Julian Edelman returns this week, because I think he goes back to being a number two receiver and not relying on him as much. So, but that entire New England offense, and then like on the flip side, the loser from today, I would say the Jags. Putting Leonard Fournette back in that situation. And, you know, if his the hamstring, even if it had the slightest hint of not being okay, he should not have been on the field. I don't know what he relayed to the coaching staff. I don't know. But going forward, I think Leonard Fournette's going to be shut down for a couple more weeks. Them as a franchise, that hurts. I don't care what everybody says about Blake Bortles. When Leonard Fournette's not in the lineup, he does so great. That was such a small sample size, and it was never something you should rely upon. They're not a better team without Leonard Fournette, so the Jags take a step back.
So let me ask you something about Fournette, since we're on there, and again, we're going to get to that game, but first of all, you have to expect an extended absence at this point because he missed 2 weeks. So they were seemingly conservative about it. And if he comes back and, you know, he didn't have that many carries before Yeldon came back, I mean, you have to be looking at least probably a 2 or 3 week additional absence from this point forward, right? Going forward. Let me ask you something. I don't think he's out for the rest of the season or anything like that. I mean, it's a hamstring. It's not a, as far as I know, it's not a tear. Where would Yeldon rank theoretically, if you knew right now that Fournette were out for the rest of the season? Going forward, where would you have Yeldon in your rankings?
I would probably put Yeldon right around RB 18, 19 range. If I knew that Fournette was going to be out for the season, obviously I don't feel that. But if that were the case, yeah, I think he'd be an every week RB 2.
Yeah, he had a big game today, 18 for 52 with a touchdown, plus 3 catches for 48 yards and touchdown. He is definitely, I mean, he's owned everyone at this point. I mean, Tags, you talked about how you would have owned him before Fournette ever got injured, but he's obviously owned everywhere at this point, hopefully by the Fournette owner. But it definitely looks like Yeldon is going to be a guy that's going to be useful for at least the next few weeks. For me,
can I throw another name in here that someone whose stock tumbled, not necessarily a team, but a player?
Yeah.
Kenyon Drake.
Ugh, what is happening? What, did he have 3 carries today?
What do you do with him? Like, I'm not kidding. Like, this is a week where I legitimately felt like he can get back on the radar. I'm like, okay, this is the game script he's been looking for. The Dolphins, this is why I always thought that he would be a fine fantasy player and that Frank Gore would be nothing, is because if they fall behind, Kenyon Drake's the better receiver. He'll obviously get carries. And then what the hell happened today? I mean, I put him at number 33 running back for the rest of the season. I don't even think I feel good about him there.
Yeah, I love, by the way, how quickly you update your rest of season rankings, because I have our rest of season rankings heading into this week and you've already updated them. So yeah, kudos to you for doing that. I do not get it. I mean, first of all, this is the bottom line. I feel like I could theoretically understand this, and probably not even then, if it were a new coaching staff, right? And they just came in and they were just like, you know what? Drake's not our guy. Gase drafted Drake. He saw last year exactly how good he could be, right? What in the world have you seen from Kenyon Drake, which says, you know what makes our team better? Giving the guy 0 touches. I mean, he had 1 catch and 3 carries today. How in the world, what is the argument? I mean, I'm not worried about Frank Gore having 11, you know, carries and getting the touchdown and everything like that, because that was all in garbage time, and that's fine at that point once the game is over, where Brock Osweiler is the quarterback. I'm fine with that, but I do not get it. And I'm reluctant, Tags, and I can't explain why. I'm still reluctant to drop him quite as far as you basically are dropping him, because I have to believe that eventually they're going to wake up and figure this out, and that he should be getting the touches to make him an RB2. But I guess at this point, it's kind of hard to argue with that. But I mean, I was hoping maybe you can offer an explanation, because I watched that game and I had nothing for you.
There's no explanation. I mean, Adam Gase, is he trying to get fired? I mean, like I said, before this week, they were 3-0, so I couldn't really argue with him on any of the points. But I think with Kenyon Drake, they'd be a better football team. I mean, Kalen Ballage got 33% of the carries that Kenyon Drake got this week. So that's a problem. I don't care what coach you are, what team you play for. It doesn't matter. You put the best player on the field. And I know Frank Gore is like a legend and nobody wants to talk bad about Frank Gore. But Frank Gore, again, you said it, he got it in garbage time. I don't know why he was put on this football team. He's a game manager running back, and that's why he'll work when they're in the lead. I just didn't envision the Dolphins having the lead as much as they did. So, I mean, talent should win in the end, but, I mean, this was a game script that I felt like, okay, buy low on Kenyon Drake, because this game script will lead back towards what the Dolphins are going to be towards the rest of the year. But this is bad.
Yeah, this is bad. There is no way to feel optimistic if you own Kenyon Drake at this point. It there's just no way. Now, I'm not dropping him or anything like that, and I'm not giving him away, I don't think, because that makes no sense. But at this point, you know, you just put him on your bench and you hope that eventually the coaching staff wakes up, because I really cannot see a plausible explanation for what's going on. Real quick, I'll give my winners and losers. The winners, I'm going to give 2 guys from the same team, Corey Davis and Taywan Taylor. I mean, Marcus Mariota looked good. Davis, 15 targets, 9 receptions, 161 yards and a touchdown. And Taywan Taylor, you know, there's no Rishard Matthews now. There's no Delanie Walker. I mean, those targets have to go somewhere. 9 targets and 7 catches for 77 yards. I don't think it's going to be quite as good as this. I mean, it was kind of a quote-unquote shootout. I mean, not crazy like that. But it was really good to see them both get involved, especially a guy like Davis. I don't know about you, Tags. I've gotten a ton of questions about him going forward. Can I drop him? And I've said, frankly, if you are in a relatively shallow league, I don't want to drop him. But he was at a point for me where, look, if you were in a roster crunch and you were dealing with injuries and stuff like that, I would have been okay with dropping him. But I'm glad to see him have a huge performance coming on. And again, I think Taywan Taylor is going to be a guy who's kind of interesting going forward. As for a loser, I can't believe this was not your loser. And hopefully you can give me some insight. Jordan Howard. I mean, in the end, he had 10 carries, but almost all of that was in garbage time. And, you know, but at the end of the first half, he had 2 carries, I think. I mean, Tariq Cohen looked fantastic. He looked great this whole game. But, I mean, what was the deal with Jordan Howard? Is he getting phased out, or what's the deal?
This was a conversation I was also having with friends throughout the game, and I said, was it just me, or is that Jordan Howard just looks slower? And they were of the mindset saying that he might be dealing with a knee injury, because something was mentioned about a knee injury with him and that he might have slowed him down. I'm like, I don't believe that, though, because he wouldn't be in the second half when they're up, you know. I think at the time they were up 35.
Yeah, he threw 5 touchdowns in the first half. They were up by plenty, of course, and then he was getting a lot of targets.
Yeah, and if Jordan Howard had been on the bench the entire second half, I would have believed that. I would actually been like, yeah, there probably is some underlying issue that we don't know about. But Jordan Howard, they just didn't look like a good team with him on the field today. I mean, I'm not going to say that that's the case going forward, but the Bears offensive line hasn't been getting much of a push up front. And I don't know if Tariq Cohen coming in changes basically the defensive mindset and what they do with their packages. But the Bears game plan today was fantastic. Tariq Cohen, it may have had something to do with Anthony Miller being out of the lineup, you know, like not needing to fill a role over the middle of the field. And Tariq Cohen, he caught 7 passes. Taylor Gabriel caught 7 passes. So, I mean, there was just so much going on with the Bears today. I mean, they kind of did whatever they wanted against the Bucs, to be fair, but Tariq Cohen did look a lot better than Jordan Howard. The offense just looked different with Tariq Cohen on the field. So I think going forward, I think it would be a mistake on, you know, Matt Nagy's part if he didn't involve Tariq Cohen more. I mean, Howard still played 33 snaps compared to Cohen's 29, but again, it looked like a different team when Howard was on the field. It looked like, you know, the 2017 Bears when Jordan Howard's on the field, and it's kind of looked like that throughout the year. I mean, Jordan Howard, outside of the 1 touchdown, he hasn't really done much. So, yeah, there's definitely cause for concern there. I may have overlooked that one, but Leonard Fournette's more alarming to me because I just don't think he plays for multiple weeks.
Yeah, no, I think that's fair. And again, you know, I was watching that game kind of closely just because it was insane. And I honestly, for me, I was kind of, it's not as if Howard was ineffective. He didn't get touches. I mean, he had 1 carry early on for 4 yards. And then I think he didn't get another touch until it was 28-3 or whatever the score was, you know, at that point. So I'm kind of, you know, in the end, whatever it was, bottom line is this. They looked fantastic. I can't imagine that suddenly Howard is just going to get relegated to the sidelines. As you said, he probably is healthy. So if I'm a Howard owner, which I am in many leagues, I'm concerned, but I'm not panicking about it yet. You know what I mean? I think this might have just been part of the game plan. They could probably exploit, you know, the Bucs through the air. So I think that's sort of how they approach it. So I'm willing to write it off, but I'm a little nervous, and it was tough to watch today. And probably cost me a couple of matchups. But considering your Bears did so well, I'm going to give you a pass for it.
Nice.
Let's get into the game recaps here. As always, let's briefly touch on the Thursday night game, which was an awesome shootout. Rams 38, Vikings 31. I actually think that there's not all that much to take away from the game, other than it's 2 very good offenses sort of going against each other. So I guess I'll throw this out to you. For the Rams, I mean, Jared Goff, obviously 26 of 33 for 465 yards and 5 touchdowns. You had him 13th heading into the week. I had him 14th heading into the week. Did you move him up? Is he a must-start option at this point?
Yeah, I did move him up. I think he's a must-start while the cornerbacks are struggling. Like, Aqib Talib is out for a period of time. We don't know how long that's going to be. And Marcus Peters, he wasn't himself. So if the defense is struggling the way that they did against the Vikings, yeah, I think Jared Goff, I moved him up to number 10. I do believe that he's ahead of Ben Roethlisberger for me. And it's not to say that Jared Goff, the reason that you're buying him is because he threw 5 touchdowns. It's more like he's going to be a little bit more consistent than Ben Roethlisberger. I still view him somewhat as a streamer, like probably one of the best streamers out there. And I know people are saying, well, Mike, if you have a QB 10, that's not a streamer. It really is, because outside like the top 8 or 9 quarterbacks, I view everybody as streamer. So I'm okay swapping those guys in and out. But the one big key takeaway for me from this game is that it's one thing I've been accepting this year. And it's something I actually wrote the intro to my primer in talking about it and saying that I was always closed-minded to the fact that there could be 3 wide receivers on one team that were productive every single week, that there's no way that it could withstand. It was my concern with the Rams this year. It was concerned with the Lions, with Kenny Galladay. But I'm slowly coming around to the idea that you have, you know, these offenses in today's NFL, and especially one like them and one like the Lions, who aren't using the tight end position. And if they're not targeting their tight ends, it's essentially funneling everything to that third wide receiver, so you're going to get production. So the one thing is I ended up moving every single Rams wide receiver into my top 25 receivers for the rest of the year, because they're every week starters. There's no way I can deny this any longer. Robert Woods still, I want to say, leads this team in targets. Cooper Kupp is getting the targets where they matter because he's getting targeted in the red zone a whole bunch. And then you have Brandon Cooks, who's just a game breaker. is this team is just too hard to defend with all these weapons. And when you have Sean McVay like out there directing it, you just want a part of it.
Yeah, no, absolutely. If you can get a piece of this offense, you take it. And regarding Goff, I think I'm probably going to have him a little higher than you. I think I am going to feel like he's a must-start option. And I don't want to let my eyes sort of, you know, betray me or anything like that. But part of it is he's in this incredible offensive system, right? Where you think, you know, any competent QB could do it. But some of those throws he made, man, on Thursday night.
We all underestimated how good he actually is.
That's exactly right. I think we all did. So for me, I think my guess is he's going to be an every week starter for me regardless. But to your point, by the way, and we'll get to this later too, the three wide receiver thing without a tight end, you made this point, I believe, about Detroit. It's basically the same thing. I mean, and we'll get there a little bit, but they don't really have a tight end that they can trust. And so you've got three wide receivers, but the offense, for the most part, can support all three. So I agree with you. All three of those guys should be started without question every week. With the Vikings, not really much to talk about other than, are you any concern with Dalvin Cook? Obviously, he was going to be on a pitch count. He had 10 carries for 20 yards. Why they use those up right away, I have no idea. But are you concerned at all? Or are you willing just to write that performance off to a good defense and his injury?
Yeah, we talked about it on the Sit Start show last week. Where Bobby and Jake Seeley told me that I was crazy for thinking that Dalvin Cook wasn't someone that you'd want to start, because I was like, I'm a little worried because I don't think there's any such thing as a mild hamstring tweak. It's either you strained your hamstring or you didn't. And to know he came back and it was just like, I don't know, man, this offensive line is terrible. Kirk Cousins, I think that the Vikings have like played the wrong hand here. It's like they're trying to turn into this pass first team. Kirk Cousins has been over like 50 attempts multiple times now, or at least 50 attempts. And it's like, this is not going to work for you guys. Like, this is not the team you were built to be. They were supposed to play great defense. They're supposed to be able to run the ball. The offensive line is shot. I talked about it before the season. That was my only concern about Dalvin Cook going into the season, is the offensive line, because the schedule looked relatively easy. But, man, he's not going to be using the passing game very much, because you have Thielen, you have Diggs, you have Rudolph. They are mixing in Latavius Murray a little bit. I am a little concerned. I would buy him if you can get him for cheap enough, but it's not exciting at all. And then in week 5, they're going to be playing against the Eagles. And if you guys haven't been paying attention to the Eagles, obviously they've lost, you know, to the Titans and the Bucks, which is not good. But their run defense, they have still yet to allow a running back over 36 yards this year on the ground. So if Dalvin Cook's not being used as a receiver and he's getting minimal carries behind a bad offensive line playing against a really good Eagles defense that's going to be at home looking for blood, I wait a week to buy Dalvin Cook.
Yeah, I definitely agree. Next week, I would not be optimistic on him. In terms of whether or not this game concerned me, not really. I mean, I think they just probably should have not started him, given him another full week to sort of go, but coaches do what coaches do, and that's fine. And it was against a great defense. I do expect, given the concerns with the offensive line, that he will get his fair share of dump offs and be involved in the passing game. But I'm mildly concerned with you, Tex. My guess is probably a little less for next week, for sure, against the Eagles. Nope. I could see starting him if I absolutely had to, but for the most part, I'm going to try to avoid him. But long term, I'm mildly concerned, but I think for the most part, I'm willing just to kind of write this one off to the injury. But your point remains, frankly, their lack of defense probably helps their offense, because, you know, they're really struggling, right? And, you know, that's part of why Cousins has had to throw so much going forward, but it might take away from the running game. So we'll definitely have to see on that one, but he's going to be probably moving down the ranks a little bit. I haven't done my rest of season rankings yet, but he probably will be just a bit, although I'm not overly concerned with that. Starting with today's games, Cowboys 26, Lions 24. Good game, not a shootout or anything like that. With the Cowboys, Tags, am I correct that we will never have anything to say about the Cowboys from a fantasy perspective? I mean, Ezekiel Elliott is awesome. Dak Prescott's not really relevant, and you don't need to own any Dallas wide receiver.
Yep, that's basically where we're at. I mean, I talked about it in the live stream this morning, and I was saying that Ezekiel Elliott was like my lock of the week, because the Lions are going to allow some points, and the only player on the Cowboys that generates points is Zeke. And he came through 152 yards on the ground, 88 yards receiving with a touchdown there. He is that team. And if you take away, I have no idea. Like, if I'm a defensive coordinator, I'm going all out. I'm like selling out and be like, okay, Dak, if you could beat me with these receivers, good luck. But we're going to literally just force you to do that, because Ezekiel Elliott, you have to do better than that. But the real story of this game is Golden Tate, yards after the catch. Dallas, basically their inexperienced cornerbacks, just couldn't keep up. And Golden Tate schooled them all day. And the dude is so arrogant. I want someone to hit. Like, he's one of those guys where it's like, if I'm on the field, I'll take the 15-yard penalty. Let me hit this dude. And like, I'm not like a violent guy, but this dude twice in that game, like, walked into the end zone, like, staring at the Cowboys players. And he's so arrogant. He's easy to like hate. Like, he's that guy that you probably love if he's on your team and you hate him if he's not. Kenny Golladay, a season low, 4 targets, but he still turned him into 74 yards, so I'm not overreacting to that.
Yeah, that second Golden Tate touchdown was, I mean, really, I would not have blamed somebody from the Cowboys for just, you know, after he's actually crossed the goal line to just totally tackle him, because that was really bad. Let me ask you something. Rank the 3 Lions wide receivers going forward.
I still have Tate as the number one. In a PPR, he'd definitely be number one. In a standard league, I still probably have him number one. And Golladay and Marvin Jones, I legitimately put right next to each other. And I think some people would be like, that's crazy. But I legitimately thought about putting Golladay over Marvin Jones because I don't think he's as reliant on the big plays. But I have Marvin Jones at 28, Golladay at 29 right now, and I could see myself moving Golladay up a little bit more.
Yeah, I'm going to be at the point where Golladay is going to be a little higher. I mean, I like Jones a lot, and I think he's perfectly reliable and everything, but he's kind of touchdown reliant. I mean, he gets so many targets in the red zone at this point. Golladay is a big play guy, but he's going to make those big plays. I mean, he is just watching the game. Some of the stuff he does on the field is really awesome. So I'm firmly okay with, like, I had slowly been moving Golladay up, and now I feel like I'm pretty much ready to put him past. Now, without Sean Lee, obviously, the Cowboys struggle a little bit against the run. And Kerryon Johnson, pretty decent day. 9 carries, 55 yards, and a touchdown. How are you feeling about him going forward?
So underplayed. Matt Patricia, get off your high horse, seriously. Like, get off of it. And, like, don't ever put LeGarrette Blount on the field again. Like, over the last 2 weeks, LeGarrette Blount, 23 carries, 60 yards. That's what you're getting out of LeGarrette Blount. Kerryon Johnson, 25 carries, 156 yards. Kerryon Johnson he's a baller, and that even though it was just 9 carries, I'm buying him. I view him as an RB2 going forward. Like, I think there's no way they can keep this kid off the field. You see Theo Riddick, his snaps coming down quite a bit, and it's because Kerryon Johnson's making his way onto the field. So, yeah, Kerryon moving up in my ranks as we speak.
Yeah, you had him, I believe, 24 coming into the week. I had him lower than that. I had him about 31. I wasn't fully ready to buy in, but I am now. I think it's pretty clear at this point when you just see him on the field that he's got legitimate talent. I assume Matt Patricia is going to wake up at some point, especially given the fact that they lost this game. And you know what might have helped them win this game? If you give Kerryon Johnson more than 9 carries. So I think in the end, you know, I don't want to put too much trust in coaches, but my guess is that Patricia's going to wake up. So before we get to the next game, Tags, I do want to mention another one of our sponsors, NFL Game Pass. So last week, Tags, you and I talked about Patrick Mahomes, and you threw a little cold water on his performance against the 49ers. So the first thing I did, obviously, on Monday was to rewatch the game using NFL Game Pass. And that's because only with NFL Game Pass can you replay every game all season. It's NFL football anytime on your time. Now, of course, Tags turned out to be completely wrong on Patrick Mahomes after I watched the replay of the game. But I'm going to think about his opinions on today's game while I'm watching tomorrow. And tomorrow I'm going to spend some extra time watching the insane overtime game between the Texans and the Colts, the nutty shootout between the Bengals and the Falcons, and of course, just because I love Tags, the Bears demolishing of the Bucks, so I can really figure out what the heck was going on over there. Now, if you do have the time, you can watch the full broadcast version of the games, totally commercial free. Or if you want to speed it up a little bit, you can watch the condensed game version. That takes only about 45 minutes. And if you really want to dig deep into the game, you can watch the coaches film, which shows the all-22 angle that the pros and coaches use. With NFL Game Pass, it's game time anytime. And best of all, you can kick off the 2018 NFL season with a 7-day free trial of NFL Game Pass. Sign up now at nfl.com/fantasypros. Game on. All right, Tags, heading back to the games. We talked about this one a bit, but the Jaguars 31, Jets 12. We talked about Fournette, and we talked about Yeldon. Is there anything you want to say about the Jaguars wide receivers? Obviously, Dede Westbrook has the big game, 13 targets, 9 receptions for 130 yards. Dante Moncrief catches the long touchdown pass. But Keelan Cole, kind of quiet, just 2 receptions. I mean, can I assume that Cole is the guy you want to start most of the 3?
Yeah, he's still the one I would definitely want to start most, but it's alarming, man, to see 3 targets compared to 13 for Westbrook and 5 for Moncrief. The matchup against the Jets, it's not like that there was one shutdown cornerback that he needed to avoid in coverage or anything like that, so I really don't understand the Cole thing this week. He's been playing in the slot about 33% of the time, and the Jets have been murdered out of there, so I have no idea. Westbrook's been playing out of the slot as well, so to see him have a decent game doesn't surprise me. Dante Moncrief scored his touchdown on Trumaine Johnson, so that was probably the toughest matchup of the week for them. So, I mean, it kind of does surprise me to see Keelan Cole down here. So, I mean, the biggest story here for me is just that you really can't trust any Jags receiver week in, week out. Now, if you want to throw one of them in your lineup during the bye weeks, yeah, I don't have an issue with that, provided the matchup calls for it. But this one is just, it's really odd to me.
Yeah, honestly, I have been a big Cole proponent the entire season, and I think I have him in you know, 90% of my leagues, and I started him everywhere because I really thought, again, I figured he'd mostly go out of the slot. Buster Skrine is not a good cornerback, so I really thought he'd be fine. But that's the thing, right? I wanted to go back and watch, and I probably will tomorrow, to see whether or not maybe, like, if Tremaine Johnson was on him the whole time, I would accept if Tremaine Johnson shuts you down, right? I don't think he's really a lockdown corner, but he's good enough where I'd be like, okay, maybe Bortles just kind of avoided it. He only had three targets on the day. But no, as you said, Dont'a Moncrief scored on Tremaine Johnson, so even if that was it, it certainly wasn't any reason to avoid him. So I think what this game shows me, as you're basically saying, is that I can't rely on Keelan Cole, as I kind of thought I was moving him towards the point, just mostly because of the targets. So at this point, yeah, I mean, I'm sure at least one Jaguars wide receiver is going to be valuable most days. I mean, Bortles threw for 388 yards in a game that they controlled from the get-go. So, I mean, that's a really good sign. But picking which one is going to be tough, I guess.
Yeah, next week, by the way, that they're playing at the Chiefs next week, so you're going to want to figure out one of them.
Yeah, absolutely. Or maybe we just start all of them and it's like the Rams 2.0. What do you think? Yeah. As far as the Jets go, there's little to talk about. I'll just say, you know, Quincy Enunwa, modest production. But I mean, in a game that the Jets could do absolutely nothing, he still got 8 targets, 4 receptions for 66 yards. So, you know, if you own him in a PPR league, generally speaking, he's giving you enough production. But is there anything you want to say about my terrible Jets?
I would say that Robbie Anderson, if he's out there on the waiver wire, I would say to grab him. And the reason I'm saying that is because I think Sam Darnold is starting to realize that he can't continue to check down to Quincy Enunwa. We saw Anderson with 6 targets today. That's a season high for him. We've also seen Terrell Pryor slowly faded out of the lineup for Jermaine Kearse. Like, looking forward, you have to look forward, right? You can't just say, oh, Robbie Anderson sucked the last 4 weeks. He's going to suck forward. But they're playing against the Broncos next week. The Broncos secondary has been terrible. Honestly, even going back to last year, their secondary wasn't all that. And they've kind of, that's bled into this year. And then you have the Colts after that. So I think if Robbie Anderson is going to make any move, it'll be over the next 2 weeks. So if you can grab him before these matchups kind of take place, and just see what you have. I mean, if nothing happens, nothing happens. But I think that there's potentially a breakout performance in there.
Yeah, I mean, I'm probably not inclined to agree just because it's hard for me to see Darnold taking shots because he just, you know, the Jets offense.
Do you think there's potential coaching change coming here?
I mean, there should be, my guess is they're going to wait till the offseason, because I mean, I don't think in a rookie QB, what's the point at this point? You know, they're not going anywhere. Just let him finish out the year, let him have a full offseason with coach. But Todd Bowles will not be the coach next year, nor do I think he should be. And hopefully they get sort of an offensive minded coach in there who can kind of grow Darnold into being something special, which I think he probably could be. For now, I mean, even in Enunwa, he's fine, but I really have no interest in kind of looking almost anywhere for the Jets. But again, that type of play where it's basically like, look, here's a guy, Robbie Anderson has shown it in the past, and obviously it could happen if they say, you know what, we got to take the reins off, let's just, you know, take some shots, and it could happen as soon as this week. So that sort of the preemptive ad, if you have roster space where it doesn't cost you anything, you can drop him if he doesn't do anything, that's not a bad idea. I don't think it's going to be Robbie Anderson, but I certainly understand the point. Bears 48, Bucks 10. Tags. Do you want to say anything? I mean, if I have to ask you something about it, which we haven't actually talked about, I would say, is there anything here with Taylor Gabriel, who caught all 7 of his targets for 104 yards and 2 touchdowns, or is it just kind of the game script and that's what happened?
Yeah, no. I mean, if you guys were to read my primer this week, I said that Gabriel was being somewhat underappreciated in fantasy because he had been seeing a lot of targets. I want to say he had 15 targets over the previous 2 weeks. It was just he hadn't broke that long play that, you know, that he kind of relies on for his production. He was being used on bubble screens, on reverses, and things like that. I'm not surprised by it because he was being utilized in the offense. Am I surprised that he went for 104 yards and 2 touchdowns? Yeah, probably. I mean, someone asked me about him on basically off my article. Someone asked me about him this week over someone, and I was like, no, I don't think Taylor Gabriel is someone you want to use in season-long leagues, but I think he's a better DFS play. And obviously, I hope that guy used him in DFS because it would have worked out in his favor. But this game, I mean, the Bucs secondary looked terrible. I know that there's some people out there that saying, you know, only take so much from this game because it was the Bucs, but I mean, if you look at what Trubisky did, it was more impressive than Roethlisberger. It was more impressive than Drew Brees, what those two did against this defense. So you can't say that it didn't matter at all. They also had Brent Grimes, something that Drew Brees didn't have to throw against. So there's definitely some positive takeaways, but the Bears basically did whatever they wanted in this game, and they took whatever Tampa Bay gave them. So Taylor Gabriel and Tariq Cohen had the games of their life.
Legitimately, Tags, I really felt watching that game that Trubisky could have thrown for 10 touchdowns if he were so inclined. I mean, the guys were so wide open. That's the thing. He didn't have to worry about you know, fitting him into tight spots.
Only one was that Allen Robinson touchdown. That was a beautiful touch pass. But outside of that, you're right. Absolutely right.
Yeah. The Allen Robinson was that. Yes, that was absolutely nice. But they were wide open. It was really incredible. And that the Bucs played on Monday night. So they're on a short week and they don't have a very good secondary. But still, it was impressive. And, I you know, tags, they have a bye, I believe, next week. So you get a whole week to sort of, you know, crow about this one. And that's good. As for the terrible Bucs, O.J. Howard leaves with a knee injury. I don't know if we know how serious it is at this point. Cameron Brait catches a touchdown, so he's probably, I assume you'd agree, tags as kind of a just a streamable tight end, obviously, assuming O.J. Howard misses time. He's not going to be a must-start guy, will he be?
He might be, actually, because like when you look at the tight end landscape, I think there's only like six, maybe seven guys that I feel like are every week starts. And if O.J. Howard does miss time, I think it becomes like an Eric Ebron situation where he's like a default tight end one. Especially with Jameis Winston. They're going on their bye this week as well, the Bucs are. So you can't, like, so O.J. Howard might be back after their bye. That could very well happen. But Jameis Winston, it's clear that he's going to be the starter going forward. Ryan Fitzpatrick, you know, he was always on a short leash. It was always going to be that way. Jameis Winston looked great in the preseason. But, I mean, to walk in the second half against the Bears, it was going to be tough for him. I know it says two interceptions on his stat sheet, but the one was when he was throwing, putting his arm back. And Khalil Mack, I mean, who would have thought Khalil Mack gets a hold of his arm and pops the ball up and it's just, it's intercepted. So I'm not, don't take too much from that, Winston. If anything, I'm actually buying Jameis Winston after this game.
Yeah, I think that that's fair. And I think he completed 16 of 20 passes. So, I mean, you can't read too much into a guy coming in against an elite defense at halftime. And frankly, I think it wasn't a bad job at all. And he obviously throws the touchdown pass to Brait. Out of curiosity, Ronald Jones active for the first time all season this game. Not particularly impressive. 10 carries for 29 yards. Who is the most valuable Bucs running back against the Falcons in week 6?
Ronald Jones. I'm sticking with that because, like, you know, so I'm not, this is no dig at Peyton Barber. He had no chance to succeed. And it's kind of like the Ryan Fitzpatrick thing where they were always going to be on a short leash and they wanted to look for a reason to give Ronald Jones because this is a guy they spent a high second round pick on. They have so much invested. They have to find out what they have there. Peyton Barber was just a guy. He was undrafted, if I'm not mistaken. So this offensive line has problems and they better do something this during the bye week to address it, because if you can't run the football, you can't win football games. Like, you have to be able to run when you want to, like when you need to, and they haven't been able to do that. Peyton Barber has no room to operate. Ronald Jones, that's what I found so funny. People willing to bury Ronald Jones after the preseason, when I'm like, okay, he was running with the second team. He was playing with the second, not with all the starters on the offensive line. The starters are terrible, so what makes you think that the backups are going to be any better? Ronald Jones was continually hitting the backfield, as was Peyton Barber this game. They had no chance to do anything. There was one thing that I did take away, though. Ronald Jones did drop an ugly one in the passing game. They've said that it has been like his Achilles heel throughout training camp. So Ronald Jones not being involved in the passing game is going to hurt him. But they've invested too much not to go forward with Jones.
I completely agree. And really, frankly, regardless of any of that, Peyton Barber is terrible. He is playing terrible football right now. There is no reason to not at least go to Ronald Jones to see what you can get for a spark, especially you get a bye week to sort of, you know, get him involved and everything like that. So I completely agree. Peyton Barber is completely irrelevant to me going forward. I do think Ronald Jones will be the more valuable running back. As to how valuable he's going to be, I don't know. I agree that drop was egregious, and that is kind of his bugaboo. So he's really got to get that sort of set. But going forward, I would expect Ronald Jones to be much more valuable than Barber for sure. Patriots 38, Dolphins 7. We have covered this game pretty well. I do want to ask you, you know, I know Rob Gronkowski left with an ankle injury. I do not know how serious it is. They had the game pretty well in hand, so I'm going to err on the side of it not being serious unless we hear differently. Of course, they do have a Thursday night game, as we said. But my question is, other than that, are you concerned about him at all? I mean, he did have 7 targets, only 4 catches for 44 yards. And here's the thing. He is getting double teamed more than 70% of the time coming into the game. He's getting triple teamed or more, meaning sometimes he is quadruple teamed 16% of the time. I mean, nobody can succeed in that. Are you worried? Is this what defenses are just going to do to take him out of the game?
Yeah, I think I saw my dude, Pat Thorman, tweet that out earlier in the week. And it was just like a mind-blowing stat. And like, to be honest, you kind of saw it on primetime when you saw Matt Patricia go against this team, the team that he knows very well. And like, they literally had Gronk double teamed every single play. And that's always tough to do as a defense. Like, I still think that people tend to overrate that and think that, oh, let's just take away the top option. It's easier said than done when, like, you have a certain defensive scheme you're working with and you're not going to completely change everything that you do on defense just for one player. I tend to think Gronk is going to bounce back. I do think that he's probably a buy low at this point because the Patriots offense hasn't really started to click yet. having more threats on the field, I think, will only help Gronk, because if you can't double team him with Josh Gordon out there for every snap, you can't double team when Julian Edelman's back in the lineup in week five. You know what I mean? Like, these players are coming back. Sony Michel proved that he can get something done on the ground this week. James White is still a threat. So there's just so many layers to this offense. It's just Chris Hogan and Gronk have struggled because basically those were the only threats in this offense. And I think that's why Philip Dorsett, you've seen him not see basically any attention and him, you know, have a good start to the season. But as far as I'm concerned, Philip Dorsett going forward is probably going to be like droppable.
Yeah. Oh, I completely agree with that. He obviously caught the touchdown pass today, but yeah, I agree. He is not really going to matter because Edelman comes back this coming week. I am a little concerned about Gronkowski because this has been effective, and up until today the Pats offense really did not look good. But I do think Julian Edelman will open things up, and I think, you know, the Patriots, they kind of do this every year. They really, after four games, you're kind of like, oh boy, they really don't look that great. What's going on? Maybe this is the end. And then they roll off 10 wins in a row. So I do think in the end they're going to scheme their way around this and figure it out. But, you know, in the meantime, I'm mildly concerned because this is sort of a something that every team is doing, and he's getting frustrated by it. So it's sort of something which, if they're willing to do that and they're just willing to take their chances, then it will limit his production. But I do think in the end that, given the fact that Josh Gordon will get more comfortable with the offense, he played today obviously, but only two catches for 32 yards, and given the fact that Edelman's coming back, I do think that things will open up more coming in. For the Dolphins, I mean, I'm pretty sure we covered it, which was basically, why are you not giving Kenyon Drake more carries? Is there anything else you want to say about them?
No. I mean, is everybody done with their Kenny Stills cartwheels after week one? I mean, there were so many victory laps being done after that. It was kind of crazy.
We've talked about it. I am more of a Stills guy than you are. I am not like I love Kenny Stills or anything like that. I do think in the end he finishes well. I have shares of him in tons of leagues because he was dirt cheap and nobody was getting him. I do think that he's going to be fine. I wish Devontae Parker could sort of, you know, A, be healthy, and B, play well, just so that Kenny Stills is not like the only guy out there, unless you're going to worry about Albert Wilson. But I do think that Stills is kind of like, whatever, he's going to be like a wide receiver three, but I like him more than you do, so you stop insulting him.
I just can't believe that Kenny Stills didn't get it done here. Like, this matchup was like great, but I mean, I know Tannehill like really was really bad today. I can't take too much away from it. I'm just basically saying that Kenny Stills was never going to be like that top 20 guy every week.
No, I definitely didn't think so. He's a boomer bust guy, and I think, look, I didn't watch the game that closely because I was watching a lot, but I mean, I did see Gilmore on him for, you know, a bit, and he's really kind of their only option in the passing game at this point. So I'm sure that they were kind of, you know, that's what Belichick does. They don't have to worry about taking away Kenyon Drake because Adam Gase did that for him. So they probably focus their attention on Stills. Okay, moving on. A fantastic shootout. Bengals 37, Falcons 36. This was an absolutely nutty game. So there's a couple of things I want to say. The first thing is, Tex, please tell me, because I don't know what else I have to do to you. Are you going to finally move Tyler Boyd up your rest of season rankings?
Yeah, I did. I actually did last week. I moved him into, I want to say it was my top 40 wide receivers.
I have it at 52nd coming into the week. Now, that was a little earlier. I don't know if you updated it like midweek or something.
Yeah, I did as the week went on. Yeah, because like I said, I had a lot of stuff going on with Buddy, my dog, last week. So it definitely affected things, but I've definitely moved him up. And my newest update that'll be coming out, I still have him at 42, and I'm probably too low, but I mean, the thing is, I can't put him over guys like John Brown. I can't put him over Quincy Enunwa. Mike Williams, I would rather have over Tyler Boyd. Sterling Shepard, Tyler Boyd, that's where like the area gets gray, because it's like Geronimo Allison. Would you rather have Tyler Boyd than Geronimo Allison? This is not a dig at Tyler Boyd. It's more of like how deep the wide receiver position is, like at that area. I think you could like interchange guys from 30 to like 44 or 45. So I don't think anybody's crazy for having him in their top, you know, 35 receivers. But me personally, right now, I still have him at 42.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's fair. Look, I had him at 38 coming in, and he's probably going to continue to move up. I think that the point that you made is really the most appropriate point, which is there's very little difference when you get to that area, right? All these guys, you're sort of throwing them up in the air, and you're being like, well, I don't know, I'll take this guy. But if the difference of 10 spots might be nothing at all, you know, you might say, yeah, I guess I could see starting this guy over that guy, even though they're 10 spots apart in the ranking. So I completely agree with you there, but I do like him. I do think this is for real, and I'm excited about it. I think Gio Bernard's been great, obviously, and again, this was a great matchup, obviously, generally speaking, although he didn't do quite as much in the air as I thought he would, because that's sort of only four catches for 27. They're just using him while he's out. I think Mixon is the guy when he gets back, and obviously, even though it's not fantasy relevant, really, obviously, I just want to give some thoughts out to Tyler Eifert, who I think fractured his ankle. I think Schefter's already tweeted out the obvious that he's done for the season. So, you know, unfortunate for the guy, but obviously a great player and really wish he could just sort of stay healthy. For the Falcons, obviously the offense is great. Talk about, you know, Calvin Ridley. I mean, he really had another big game. Only six targets, obviously. But talk to me about Calvin Ridley, actually. You had him 44th rest of the season. I had him 43rd. He's really the only guy I want to know because we know we love Julio Jones. Matt Ryan's playing well. I want to know what you're doing with Calvin Ridley going forward.
I want any piece of this offense that I can get, to be honest with you, and that includes Matt Ryan. I actually moved Matt Ryan into my top eight quarterbacks for the rest of the season, and I do view him as every week starter. And the thing is I think this offense is only going to get more expensive after the next week because they're playing in Pittsburgh against the Steelers. If there's one game this NFL season where you like literally want to get your popcorn out for, that's the one. Like this Falcons defense over the last 3 weeks, 335 yards and three touchdowns to Cam Newton. Cam Newton never throws for three touchdowns. He never throws for 300 yards. He did it against them. Drew Brees, 396 and three. Then you have Andy Dalton walking in there and 337 and three. This is going to be a game of like, I want to see what the over under is set at for this game, because like, honestly, I could see it up towards 60 points. And I might be tempted to take the over because it's just like these two offenses and the defenses are struggling so much. Calvin Ridley is a sell high, though, and I'm going to say this because, and this is coming from like legitimately the biggest Calvin Ridley fan on the earth. Like, I was like screaming from atop a mountain telling you that Calvin Ridley should have been a top five pick in dynasty drafts, but yet people let him fall into the second round for whatever friggin' reason. Calvin Ridley is a stud. However, I saw a poll by, I'm going to give Michael Fabiano, giving him the credit here, because he did this poll saying, who would you rather have for the rest of the season? And this was over like 4,000 votes in this poll. 54% of people said they'd rather have Calvin Ridley than Julio Jones. I laughed so hard. And the thing is I was like, some people have probably trolled Fabiano with that, like by clicking on Ridley. But I still think that there's a good portion of the fantasy community that's so down on Julio Jones, which, by the way, Julio Jones still, even though he didn't score a touchdown here, he still scored more PPR points today than Calvin Ridley did. So I have Calvin Ridley up. I moved him all the way up to number 30 wide receiver for the rest of the season. So yes, I'm saying that he is going to be startable. This defense is so bad. They're going to throw the ball a lot. But I mean, he had seven targets over the first 2 weeks. He had six targets this week. So it's like you're looking in that 5 to 7 target range most weeks. And if he doesn't score, it's like he would have walked away with four catches for 54 yards. You're not like crazy about that. So if you can sell Calvin Ridley for, you know, someone, I haven't like put together a comparison right now, but if people think that he's worth as much as Julio Jones, they're out of their freaking minds.
I mean, I'm shocked to hear that. I mean, and again, if Julio Jones found the end zone ever, I think he'd probably, well, maybe not, but probably be the undisputed number one wide receiver in fantasy, right? I mean, he had 12 targets, 9 catches, 173 yards. He is a beast. Calvin Ridley, I'm really impressed with what he's been doing. He's not in the same conversation as Julio Jones. And if people are valuing him somehow as like a number one wide receiver, then you definitely have to sell. I'm more than happy to start him, but more as a wide receiver three going forward. I basically agree with everything you say. I'm not going to go crazy with it, but if people are valuing him like that, and this game probably only helps, I would definitely sell as well. Packers 19, Bills 0. Randall Cobb was inactive, so it was time for Geronimo Allison to step up, and he kind of did. I mean, he got 11 targets, 6 catches for 80 yards. I believe he left with a possible concussion.
Yep, they confirmed it. He had a concussion, yeah.
Okay, so obviously, you know, they're at the Lions next week. Hopefully he'll recover by then. But what about the running backs tags? Obviously, you know, I assume you're ready to move Aaron Jones ahead of Jamal Williams in your rest of season rankings, correct?
Oh, I did. This week I ranked Aaron Jones as a top 24 running back, and you know, he scored and he had 65 yards and 17 through the air. So he's going to finish as that top 24 running back. I expected a bigger split though. I expected to see Aaron Jones get more, and the reason I expected that is because Aaron Rodgers went to bat for Aaron Jones during the week. He talked about Jones and the fact that he brings something to this offense that they haven't had since back in Ryan Grant days. Like he went all the way back to Ryan Grant days, which not Ryan Grant receiver, Ryan Grant, but running back. But Jones, he's so much more electric than Jamal Williams. And the thing is, I was the one saying I like Jamal Williams because he's a more well-rounded back, but this team needs a lift in the run game. Like, they cannot continue to strut Jamal Williams out there, 11 carries, 27 yards. They can't do that. He doesn't offer anything in the passing game. He is a good pass blocker, and that's important because Rodgers' mobility is limited right now, but Aaron Jones is just so much more electric. He's I don't know if he's better in the passing game, but he's serviceable. So Aaron Jones, I moved up. I have him as my number 28 running back for the rest of the season. Jamal Williams has dropped down to number 37. So it's definitely Aaron Jones for me going forward.
Yeah, I completely agree. I'm going to probably have them right around the same area. But yeah, I mean, you know, Aaron Rodgers came out and said, we need to get Jones more involved. He was more involved. He looked good today, 11 for 65 with the touchdown. I agree. I mean, all three running backs are going to be involved. Obviously, even Ty Montgomery, two catches for 56 yards today, five carries. But, you know, it is Jones' backfield, in my opinion. So I agree. I'm going to have him probably outside the RB2 range, but getting right up there, and he can work his way in. For sure, if he keeps this going. I assume, do you have anything you want to say about the Bills other than avert your eyes?
Yeah, just attack them with defense. Stream your defenses against them.
Yeah, that's all you can do. It's pretty much one of the easiest plays. Titans 26, Eagles 23 in overtime. Lots of overtime games today, buddy. So we already talked about the wide receivers for Tennessee. What about Derrick Henry? Is he droppable for you at this point, Tex?
Is Derrick Henry droppable? No, he's not droppable for me at this point. And the reason I say that is because they're going to be going to play the Bills next week. And anybody that plays the Bills is going to see their value rise. They need to get their ground game going. I don't know how Tennessee is now 3-1.
I feel like we say that every week. I can't believe Tennessee won this game.
Yeah, I don't know how they keep doing it, because Mariota, he had a better game for sure, but there were throws he left in the field as well. He didn't look perfect, but it's definitely a step in the right direction to know that they trusted him throwing the ball 43 times. It tells me that they understood the matchup first and foremost, because Philly, you don't run on them. You have to try and throw the ball on them. Corey Davis is a stud. He always was. it was just more like, can we trust Mariota to come around and like literally just do something? And Mariota also ran the ball 10 times, which is more than Derrick Henry. I'm definitely not getting rid of him. I'm starting Derrick Henry next week, as a matter of fact, against the Bills. And like I suggest you should do the same if you have him on any of your fantasy teams. But after that game, sell high. Abso-friggin-lutely.
Yeah, I agree. I think really it's a really, really thin formula for him to have success. And it is that they have to be in a positive game script. That's basically the only way that you know going in. And other than the Bills game against the Vikings, I think, you know, we can feel pretty confident that the Titans are going to have an easy time with the Bills next week. So I would start Henry next week, and I'm not cutting him, but, you know, other than that game, I kind of agree. I can't really foresee any time that I'm going to want to start him. Looking on the other side of the ball, the Eagles, any takeaways that you want to give from this one, Tags?
Alshon Jeffrey looked really good. Nelson Agholor looked terrible. I watched a lot of that game, actually. It was one of the chosen ones that ended up down in the man cave. But yeah, Nelson Agholor looked bad.
He did get 12 targets.
Oh, he did. And he had 22 yards. I mean, that's less than 2 yards a target. That's terrible. But Alshon Jeffrey, it was a similar what we saw last year with him and Carson Wentz, where if he's covered, he's still going to get the ball if he's in one-on-one coverage. Like, Carson Wentz trusts him. And there's really no reason he shouldn't. He had 9 targets, caught 8 of them for 105 yards and a touchdown, and some tight coverage at times. Like, Malcolm Butler and him tussled quite a few times. The running back situation, Jay Ajayi had a chance to separate himself. It wasn't the greatest matchup to do so. But knowing that Corey Clement and Darren Sproles were out of the game, I thought he would get a bigger role in the passing game. He ended up with 11 yards receiving. He looked mediocre. I don't think Jay Ajayi looked phenomenal or anything like that. So knowing that Sproles is probably coming back next week and that Clement will probably be active, this is going to be a timeshare. But Alshon Jeffrey definitely looked good, and I moved him into my top 24 receivers for the rest of the season.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it was the illness, not the shoulder, that was the story basically coming into this week as to whether or not he would play. He looked 100%. He looked fantastic. 8 catches on 9 targets for 105 yards and the touchdown. And give Jay Ajayi a break, okay? The dude's playing with a fractured back.
I legitimately had the same exact injury. Now, I don't know the extent of his. Like, I fractured 2 vertebrae before. And when it happened, it like freezes you up, and you're just like, you're so like stiff. You can't move very much. And I remember my dad telling me, because I was only like 18 at the time, he told me that I had pulled a muscle. And I'm like, no, I think it's worse than that. Like, it hurts like bad. And went to the doctor, and they said the only way that you can make a fracture get better is basically by having rest. And I had a physical job at the time. They put me on bed rest for a month. They said, do not do any physical activity for a month, and then you can go back. I went back. The fracture, it kind of went back together. Like, you know, it's an injury that's not going to get better playing through it. It's never going to get better. But the thing is, they removed him from the injury report. I don't know how bad the fracture was. I have no idea. I'm not a doctor, but I know that back fractures don't get better by playing through them.
Yeah, certainly the outlook for Ajayi is cloudy, at least especially with Clement and Darren Sproles likely on their way back. Let's move quickly now to the next one. Texans 37, Colts 34 in another crazy overtime game that Frank Reich basically says, I don't think it's going to worry about a tie. Don't worry about that. If you didn't see that, Frank Reich basically went for it on fourth down very late in overtime that basically handed the Texans the win as opposed to taking the tie. And he basically said he's not playing for the tie. So I'm not an NFL coach, so what do I know? But that seemed ridiculous to me. Let's talk briefly on the Texans side of the ball. Let's talk about Kiki QT. I mean, he had 15 targets, 11 receptions, 109 yards. Now, Will Fuller, although, of course, he scored another touchdown, he did leave the game with a hamstring injury that has since basically been, they've come out and said it was extremely minor. He could have played. But are you interested in QT at all going forward?
Oh, yeah.
No.
If you listen to the podcast this offseason, we went through a lot of the prospects, and one of the guys that was like a sleeper on mine, and I want to say Sigmund Bloom, him and I were in agreement on Kiki QT and the fact that he's like, he reminds me of a Tyreek Hill type player. I'm not going to sit here and say he's as explosive as Tyreek Hill, but Kiki QT is fantastic. And using him out of the slot is going to create nasty mismatches. So to see him end up with 15 targets and 109 yards is huge. We saw Bruce Ellington in the role that he's playing. Bruce Ellington was fantasy relevant in good matchups. So what makes us think that QT is not going to be?
Yeah, no, if you watch the game, it's hard to come away with anything but impressed. You know, especially if Fuller is out and they're calling it a minor hamstring injury, but we heard Dalvin Cook's a hamstring injury was a cramp and then he missed several weeks. So, you know, certainly don't want to take a chance. They are playing the Cowboys next week. He's certainly somebody to add regardless of Fuller's injury. With the Colts, I mean, obviously they have a tough matchup now with no Hilton. Luck looked good. We talked about that. Anything you want to talk about with the Colts side of the ball?
So T.Y. Hilton's going to miss next Thursday. They've already kind of confirmed that. He left the game with a hamstring injury. He left actually early on with a shoulder injury, which looked like it could have been like a broken clavicle. But then he came back and he suffered a hamstring injury. And Reich already came out and said that he's probably not going to be ready for Thursday. So consider him out if, you know, if Jack Doyle is out again. And it's most likely that's going to be the case because, I mean, he was announced out on Friday. So it means he wasn't even close to playing. It looks like it's going to be Eric Ebron and Ryan Grant as like the go-to options. And Nyheim Hines, by the way, you know, I had Mike Williams, I had Calvin Ridley, I had John Brown. I don't mean to brag here, guys, but I've been on fire with this article that I do. We release it on Saturday morning where it's weekend waiver wire stashes. And I look for players who are less than 40, 30, 20% owned in fantasy leagues. And a lot of these guys are like legitimately like 20% owned. All those guys were in there before their big breakout performances. Nyheim Hines was in there this week before this performance. I believe that he's going to be the Darren Sproles of this offense, which means he's going to be very flex worthy in PPR leagues. And knowing that Hilton's out and Doyle's out, Andrew Luck needs some of those guys to catch the ball to the backfield. We saw Hines catch 9 passes for 63 yards and 2 touchdowns. And the one touchdown he caught over Tyrann Mathieu, and it was like nasty. It was a great route and he timed the ball well. He did a little push off, but it was subtle so that a ref wasn't going to see it. It was great. So Nyheim Hines, absolutely worth an ad.
Look, any running back getting 11 targets is certainly worth an ad. And especially in light of the injury, for sure, in the short term, he's definitely somebody to pick up. Coming to the afternoon games, which were basically on when we started still, Seahawks 20, Cardinals 17 for the Seahawks. I mean, obviously, Chris Carson, kind of a surprise inactive in the late games. Mike Davis, not Rashad Penny, gets the bulk of the work. 21 carries, 101 yards, 2 touchdowns. Are you picking up Mike Davis, or is it just a one-week thing?
I don't know.
You're making him maybe an RB2 going forward tags? Is that what we're doing? Yeah, right.
Yeah, right. I was unwilling to say that Chris Carson was like a must start going forward because I wasn't going to trust just 1 week, and I still don't. You know, Rashad Penny led the Seahawks in touches from weeks 1 and 2. Then you had Chris Carson in week 3, and now you have Mike Davis. I mean, Mike Davis, the Seahawks had scored 1 rushing touchdown in their last 18 games coming into week 3, and now they've scored 3 rushing touchdowns the last 2 weeks. I don't know what's going on with the play calling here. Like, the Seahawks shouldn't have won this game based on how the play calling went. Russell Wilson, man, it's brutal. I have no excuse for what's going on. I've been saying that it's Brian Schottenheimer, the play caller. It's just, it's brutal, man, watching these plays. Like, Russell Wilson, they're trying to make him into a pocket passer, and it's just not working. So, yeah, it's pretty ugly. Not much to take away here. I don't think Mike Davis is, like, someone that if you have a number one waiver priority, I don't think you should use it on Mike Davis. I'm sure we're going to talk about this in the Waiver Wire show that we record tomorrow. I think Chris Carson comes back, and he's still the number one. I think Rashad Penny's still involved. It's just, ugh.
I couldn't agree with any of that more, frankly. I would not be wasting a waiver pick on Mike Davis. I am concerned about Wilson. And that's part of what I was going to ask. I really think he's falling out of the sort of must start options, because he's at his best basically when he's kind of running for his life and he's just making up plays as he goes, and then he's brilliant. And so he either runs or he finds somebody open after extending the play, and that's just not the offense they're running right now. So I'd be concerned if I were a Wilson owner for sure going forward. With the Cardinals, I mean, look, Josh Rosen, the end numbers aren't overly impressive, you know, 180 yards passing and a touchdown, but I mean, the offense looked far more competent against a pretty decent defense. Earl Thomas was, by the way, carted off.
He's done for the year. He fractured his leg.
Yeah, and I don't know about Will Disley, but I know he hurt his knee and he missed almost the entire game, so I don't know how serious that is either, just to point that out. But let me ask something. How does Josh Rosen's presence make you feel about David Johnson going forward? Better?
A lot better. I mean, I like the way that they used him today in terms of like giving the ball 22 times. I felt like it was a week that they were going to do that. Seattle hasn't been like shut down against the run. Rosen only threw the ball 27 times. So when you see that David Johnson had four targets, you're like, eh. But when you think about it, it's like four targets on 27 attempts is not terrible. Larry Fitzgerald led the team with seven targets. So it's not like it was like a huge disparity between the two. So yeah, I mean, I think it helps David Johnson going forward for sure. He looked more competent. He was willing to throw to the outside wide receivers. Like JJ Nelson got involved. There was one deep ball that went to him, and I think it was called back due to penalty. Chad Williams caught his first touchdown of his NFL career. There were some good things in his performance for sure. There's going to be some rookie mistakes. That offensive line is terrible, but it wasn't a bad debut, that's for sure.
No, I agree. If you own anybody on the Cardinals, frankly, I think you're feeling better today than you did at this point last week, for sure. Fitz is obviously battling a hamstring injury. There's a report he's nowhere close to 100%. So obviously, if he can get healthy at some point, maybe you should rest him. I don't know. Then obviously that would benefit the entire offense. But as a whole, David Johnson owners surely have been worried coming in. I think you should feel a lot better after this game. In a game that just ended, in our third overtime game of the week, the Raiders defeat the Browns 45-42. If you own anybody on the Raiders, you have probably won your fantasy matchup. Derek Carr throws for four touchdowns. Marshawn Lynch rushes for 130 yards. Amari Cooper scores a touchdown. Jared Cook scores two touchdowns. Jordy Nelson scores a touchdown. I mean, I guess I will ask it this way. They had a bunch of tough matchups going forward. I mean, maybe Miami notwithstanding, you know, given what they look like, but they have a pretty decent defense. They had three tough matchups to open sort of the season, so people were down. I mean, are you sort of optimistic at this point about, if you own somebody, you know, about Amari Cooper or even Jordy Nelson at this point? Are you optimistic?
So I love Amari. Amari and Ridley have been like my poster boys for the people that everyone loves to hate, but I stand up for. And Amari Cooper's still that guy. He's still really good at football. But the thing is, the targets is just inconsistent. In the 2 weeks that he hasn't performed, he had 3 and 5 targets. Number one wide receiver shouldn't get 3 or 5 targets. I stand by that. I don't care who the matchup is against. This matchup against the Browns wasn't an easy one for Amari. Denzel Ward, he was seeing him a lot in coverage, especially with Jordy Nelson playing the slot a lot more with Seth Roberts out. So do I want to take so much from this one performance? No, I don't want to take too much away from it because, again, we haven't seen them. We haven't even seen them put back-to-back games together, this Raiders offense. So I don't want to go over the top. Jared Cook has wound up in my tight end one rankings every single week now, but it's only because of how bad the position is at tight end. The Browns had been relatively good against tight ends coming into this week, so I thought they may have been over their tight end woes, but apparently not. 110 yards and 2 touchdowns to Jared Cook says otherwise. So, I mean, massive, massive games on both sides of the ball. I was a little shocked to see Mayfield end up with 2 picks here.
He really didn't play particularly well. He completed about 50% of his passes. It was definitely, and none of the wide receivers really did anything. I mean, Landry scores the touchdowns.
Callaway is bad, man. Like, I don't want to say he's bad because there's things that he's really good at, but he is struggling right now. And I want to go back and watch this game because it's like one of those games where I want to see how many passes were actually dropped by the receivers of Cleveland, because I recall, because I like when trying to watch multiple games, you don't get to see everything, that like you just kind of miss some things. And I saw a few drop passes by the receivers there. So I'm going to go back and watch. But I know Callaway, he had a bad game. Like, he just didn't look good. And I know everybody wanted to play him this week and they felt like he was someone that was a must play for whatever reason. I had him outside my top 50 wide receivers this week. I didn't feel like it was a great matchup against Oakland.
Yeah, and again, you know, I don't want to write too much into this, but it's not easy to travel across country and play sort of in that environment. So
Oakland's nasty, man.
No, it's nasty, and generally it's kind of a rough game for all the pass catchers. Obviously the running backs do well. I mean, Nick Chubb scores 2 touchdowns, but on 3 carries. So you know, obviously Carlos Hyde got 22 carries, so he's obviously still the guy to own there. Saints 33, Giants 18. Kind of a down game fantasy wise, obviously, for Drew Brees. Michael Thomas finally kind of comes back down from superstardom essentially to just get four targets. He does get all four receptions for 47 yards. Kamara obviously does his thing. Anything you want to talk about from the Saints side?
A wild stat is that Michael Thomas has now caught 42 of 44 targets this year.
Yeah.
That's stupid.
It's a little efficient. I think that would be the word that I would use or the way to describe it. It's slightly efficient. Yeah, that is not normal. He's a superstar. And again, I've had him as my number one wide receiver over Antonio Brown for 2 weeks at this point. And I don't think this game is going to change my mind, although I do expect Brown to have a big game. They're just awesome. So obviously it's not going to be the best player in the game every single time. Sometimes Kamara is going to get the rushing touchdowns as he did in this one. How about from the Giants? Obviously Sterling Shepard tags. You were on him. 10 targets, caught all of them, 77 yards and a touchdown. Obviously with Evan Ingram out, I mean, are you starting him essentially as a borderline wide receiver too?
I don't think I put him that high every single week. This week I did have him in wide receiver two range just because the matchup was so good. New Orleans lost Patrick Robinson, their starting slot corner, and they were forced to start PJ Williams, and that's never a good thing. So Sterling Shepard was bound to have a good game if they knew how to game plan, which I think Pat Shurmur does. The weird thing is, man, and Odell Beckham, they need to get him going. They really do. He was someone I threw in a couple DFS lineups and tournament lineups. Saw 11 targets, but just 7 catches for 60 yards. You saw him throwing a little tantrum on the sideline at some point, too. So, I mean, this team is just, I'm confused at what's going on here because Eli has been somewhat efficient. Like, he hasn't turned the ball over as much as you would think, but he's not doing anything special with the ball. He's checking down an awful lot, and you're seeing a low yards per attempt because of that. But this defense is just, I mean, did we ever think that they would keep up with the Saints, though?
No. I mean, it's fair, frankly. Odell, I think he does not have a touchdown yet on the season. I mean, really, they need to sort of focus on that at this point going forward. But for Shepard, honestly, everybody was on him because we all sort of recognized what it was, and he delivered. And so I think as long as, I think I probably will have him right at that 24 range most weeks going forward, at least until Evan Ingram comes back. I mean, next week they're against the Panthers, you know, not a perfect matchup, not the worst matchup. So I think I'll probably have him somewhere close to there. Getting to our last game, tags. Last game of the day, Chargers 29. 49ers 27, frankly, much more competitive than most of us thought. You know, Mike Williams, really disappointing effort. I think most people were pretty excited about him. He has just one catch. I mean, how are you feeling about him going forward?
It was always like you had to wonder, and I haven't taken a look at the snap counts in this game just yet because it was still, I want to say it was still going on while when we started recording. So I didn't get to look at it just yet. But the only concern I had going into this one was that they had, obviously, Keenan Allen was healthy. Tyrell Williams was healthy. And they had Travis Benjamin coming back to the lineup. So I didn't know how they would do the snaps because he was behind Tyrell Williams in snap counts, but he's been outproducing him. And then with Travis Benjamin coming back, I'm like, is he going to be fourth in snaps now? Like, I wanted to see what they did, but I thought he would have earned a bigger role. I really did. Austin Eckler is getting more playing time than I think anybody ever expected this year. So there's just so many different players in this offense. But at the end of that game, again, it was right after it happened. We started recording, so I don't know what the outcome of it was. But Keenan Allen caught a ball along the sideline. He came down weird or got hit. I can't remember what it was. But he got up, and it looked like he was like moving his shoulder like weird, like he was very uncomfortable. So I don't know if Keenan Allen suffered an injury towards the end of that game, because if he did, Mike Williams is going to become like he's going to blow up. So this was just a weird game for the Chargers. I don't know if they walked in thinking it was going to be easier than it was, because like none of their receivers had like a really dominant game. Even Keenan Allen, 7 catches for 63 yards. So Melvin Gordon doing what Melvin Gordon does, you know, just racking up points. But it's like I tell people, like, you don't want to take too much away from a big performance, even though it was very impressive against what he did against the Rams. I don't want to take too much away from this bad performance until I go back and kind of look and see what the snap counts were and things like that. So
yeah, this felt a little bit like a game that they were looking past, just because it kind of felt like, well, with, you know, CJ Beathard in the game, they probably took it for granted a little bit. And they gave him a run. So I'm willing to kind of write this off a little bit. But I was never quite as high on Mike Williams as most people. For the 49ers, I mean, just a rash of injuries. Dante Pettis was carted off. I saw Marquise Goodwin left. CJ Beathard looked like he was going to have to get taken out of the game when he was hit really hard. But, I mean, look, George Kittle obviously still doing it. 8 targets, 6 receptions, 125 yards and touchdown. Finally, the Iowa connection sort of, you know, rears its not ugly head, but good head. But is there anything else you want to talk about? I mean, Beathard acquitted himself fairly well. I don't know if it's going to be quite the downgrade that we were all worried about without Jimmy Garoppolo.
I still think it is. I mean, when you look, if you go through and you look at what the Chargers defense has been without Joey Bosa on the field, it's a better matchup than people expect. Honestly, like, so you go through it. I mean, even Josh Allen was able to throw for 7.4 yards per attempt against them. So it's not like, I don't think there is like a bad matchup in terms of like for a quarterback, but Beathard did, and he threw a couple touchdowns. George Kittle scored on a long one. I think it was like, might have been like 75, 80 yards or something like that. It was a lot of run after the catch on that one. But yeah, George Kittle and CJ Beathard, if people don't know, those two played at college together. So that was like the one connection I wasn't too worried about. The one that I was worried about was Marquise Goodwin, and seeing him with four targets, you know, two catches for 24 yards in a game where CJ Beathard threw the ball 37 times for 298 yards. That's definitely concerning.
Yeah, again, I know he left the game at some point. I do not know if he came back. Again, we're, as you know, we do this on Sunday night, so Tags and I haven't had a great chance to go back and read the news and everything like that. But I agree. I mean, there's certainly some downgrade without question. But, you know, from what I saw of Beathard, I was kind of impressed with him. But anyway, all right, well, that is it for today's show. But before we go, I do just want to say a quick thank you again to the sponsors of the show, Pristine Auction. Remember, they have a ton of great items up for auction every day, so make sure to check them out. That's Pristine. And thanks again to NFL Game Pass. Remember, you can relive every great moment of the NFL season by getting a 7-day free trial of NFL Game Pass. Sign up now at NFL.com/fantasypros. On behalf of myself and Mike Tagliere, enjoy your football. I just wanted you to watch me dissolve.
Carol G.
Juan Gabriel.
Christina Aguilera.
What do these three have in common?
You mean apart from impeccable style, chart-topping canciones, and drama?
Facts, yes, all of the above are correct, but most importantly, they're some of the biggest Latin icons in the world. And they're just a few of the game-changing Latin stars we're covering in Becoming an Icon Season 2. Listen to Becoming an Icon on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, everybody? This is Stephen A. Smith, host of the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast. Tune in every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at the very least as I bring you all new episodes that feature the biggest headlines in the world of sports, pop culture, business, and I answer your phone calls and respond to your tweets. You'll hear my unfiltered opinions and straight-shooter interviews with top celebrities and game changers, all that and more. So listen to the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.